honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode preparing you to say welcome home to Vietnam vets in your life. National Vietnam War Veterans Day is March 29th. That's a relatively new commemoration established in 2017, but Gene Gio was telling us about February 1971, when as a fire direction controlman with the 8th Battalion of the 4th Artillery, he was sent over to the Laotian border to try to neutralize the Ho Chi Minh Trail as part of Operation Lam Son 719.
If you can imagine, there's probably 100,000 Vietnamese plus American support heading down this Highway 9, which is a past Camp Carroll, turned into a dirt road, and we're going to the Laotian border. And then probably, second night, whatever, as we're traveling down Highway 9, Charlie Battery was behind A Battery, B Battery, and Battalion, and so we lost the rest of the battery. So we pull off on some ravine to the south of Highway 9, spend the night. The next morning, we get back on the road and going down highway west on Highway 9 trying to catch them. And we wind up being told somewhere along that, well, you're not going to be with your other batteries. You're going to become part of this other one, which was the 4th of the 92nd Artillery. So I get to the Laotian border, and all of a sudden, instead of four guns, we got eight guns. Four brand new ones from, they had been in Da Nang, and they had brand new carriages, brand new tubes, and we had four beat up old carriages, but nice tubes. And so now I'm chief of section of fire direction control, and I got eight guns instead of four, but we had our batteries FDC reporting to their battalion FDC. And so me and another guy are kind of sleeping in a kind of a little crater in the ground when all of a sudden a hellacious explosion goes off. And we're being fired at with Russian artillery, either 152 or 156 millimeter, whatever. And I go rushing over to FDC. And they're not doing anything, and I ask why, and he says, because their method of operation is when they're fired upon, they don't fire back. They let someone else fire. I said, well, that's a crocker. and so we get permission. We fired toward them. They were on the other side in Laos, and we're shooting at the wrong target because we see the smoke on the ridge, but really they were on a small secondary ridge behind that. And I tell you that because I was told by someone in a helicopter that that was the case. Mm. And back to FDC and back down to gun four. And before I got there, there was a large explosion, and we had two of our cannoneers got killed. Mm. That was February 4th, 1971.
These were guys you knew pretty well.
I was very, very close with gun four. Before I got there, and another guy before me, there was very little communication between fire direction control and the people on the gun. But we kind of changed it. Even I was used to go down there and hump projectile. These things weigh 208 pounds just for exercise and to help them out. So, I had a couple of friends on that gun. I know today because when we went as a group to the Vietnam Memorial, their names, and we also have a memorial at Fort Sill with all their names on it. And
what were those two guys' names?
L. Fulton and Blake Whitney. Like I say, we have a memorial, those two, and the two that died, when I told you the first one I first got there, which was August 25th, 1970.
How do you handle that? And I know that's a loaded question that might have different answers for different days of your life since, but at that time, maybe you can help us understand how you tried to handle it then and how maybe you've learned to handle it or deal with it over time.
I probably never fully deal with it. When we were on the Laotian border, and after the two guys were killed, I didn't remember anything for about 3 months. And I remember that we pulled back to some valley on the west side of Quezon, and I remember something about, you know, things flying over us, but they did not use us for fire much, if at all. And so we just kind of sat there for a month and a half before we worked our way back to Kantian. And like I say, I don't remember, probably for 2 months in my brain, what had happened then in the year 2000. And I'm out in the yard doing something, and I get a phone call that someone says, "Were I in Vietnam?" I go, "Yes." "What did, when you were in Vietnam, did you have the name Gopher?" And, like, you know, the guy, I hadn't heard that in a long time. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You remember a guy by the name of Stinky?" And I said, "Oh, yeah." And they said, "Well, I'm Stinky." And after records in the service, after 30 years, they become unclassified. So we had guys that were very good, and they were still in the military or working for the government at finding people. Well, after 30 years, your orders become unclassified. And if you can get a hold of them without the Social Security numbers marked out, it was very easy for us to find people. And out of 1,800 people that served in the 8th or the 4th, we found over 700. We have a reunion every 2 years at Fort Sill, where we all trained. 2 years later, we're east of the Mississippi. 2 years after that, we're west of the Mississippi, and then we go back to Fort Sill. When we're on Fort Sill, then we go to Lawton. We go on base with the troops that are training.
What do those reunions do for you? What do you get out of it?
Well, I get a lot out of them. They tell me things that I don't remember about Vietnam that I should have remembered, and they're very healing, and, you know, and I look forward to them. My wife, who came to all of them but the last two, she learns about stuff about me that, you know, I don't even remember.
You know, you told me about the day that that gun took a direct hit and you lost two of your friends, and you told me their names. When something like that happens, is part of your thought process, "Hey, that could happen to me"?
It wasn't up until then. You know, we had taken hits before, and minor, besides the first day I got in battery. I thought I was invincible. I thought that, no, that could not happen to me. And until we went to the Laotian border, because of, I don't know if I mentioned, we didn't get much news from the rear, and my folks were not good at communicating to me of stuff that was happening back here, like Kent State and the rest of it. So I actually thought, and the Stars and Stripes, they weren't going to tell us anything. And so I actually thought, you know, well, this war is going to end in our favor. And then we're going to the Laotian border. We're going to cut the Ho Chi Minh Trail. And then all of a sudden, one day, that completely changed. Basically, it was defeat to me. And I really did not, my thought process did not have a way of handling that. So I guess that's why everything kind of shut down as far as memory.
Yeah, and I know none of this is easy to talk about, but I'm curious, and I'm sure there's other guys out there listening who can identify with what you're talking about. Over these last 50 years since you left Vietnam and tried to get on with life, you were on the boat for a while, you said, and then, you know, an engineer with PG&E. How has that time in Vietnam affected the rest of your life, and how have you kind of processed it over the years? Are there some things you found to help?
I'd say, yeah, Army training helped a lot in dealing with people and different people and work, you know, people in the physical forces and that. I always thought I was good at that and maybe did some of my additional development into that area. And that's why, even though I was an engineer at PG&E, I also did a lot of work in the operations department as a water foreman in Burney, maintenance supervisor in Auburn, and hydro superintendent on the Feather River. And then they had slated me to go to Helms to be a full-time hydro superintendent. My wife didn't want to have our daughter being raised in the country, you know, an hour bus ride each way to school. So that's when I decided operations wasn't for me.
You mentioned going to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., seeing those names. For someone, you know, listening who didn't go through what you went through and who hasn't felt that, can you help us understand what that's like when you see the names of guys you served with, you were there when they died, and you see their names on that wall?
At first, I thought I would have a hard time even looking at Fulton and Whitney's names, but you go there and you take a penciling of it, you know, and then you kind of carry it with you, and it just makes you feel better. And there's another one, too, and he and most people that were there with me, his name was Stu Buckley, and he was a battery commander, and his name, he got fragged by one of the people at Charlie Battery to see his name there also. He was a great guy, didn't do nothing wrong. Out of clear blue eyes, somebody threw a hand grenade into his hutch, and yeah.
You know, I don't want to be cliche or melodramatic, but is it ever a thought in your mind when you see their names on the wall or you just think about their memories? Do you ever say, hey, I think Fulton or Whitney or Buckley would have done XYZ with his life? Do you ever imagine what they might have done had they lived as long as you have?
Until I went back to reunion and talked to other people and this organization here, the Vietnam Veterans of Diablo Valley, and you see people that have come back with major medical problems and major injuries, and you just stop and think, you know, that could have been me, and what would happen if I'd have come back that way, and my family, and or in that case then I didn't have a family, I didn't meet my wife till 1975, so it probably, but yeah, I do. I've got clips, and they're CBS. There was a newsman when we were out on the Laotian border, and he was doing a story about there was some general or somebody that was trying to enforce people getting haircuts. And, you know, I look, and then one of them is, it's either our A battery or C battery, and in that clip he mentions that his sister battery had two people killed, and, you know, just to watch that. I wouldn't call it sickening, but it's very saddening.
Well, and if there's anything else that you want to include, please feel free. I just want to make sure I say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for talking about something that isn't always easy to talk about. I don't know if this is an easy question to answer or not, but when it comes to the guys that you just mentioned and the 58,000 other names that are on that wall, how should we remember them today? What's the significance of their sacrifice?
It's just, it could have been. You know, I was very fortunate it wasn't me. They were not fortunate it was them. And I just happy to be where I'm at and thank God every day.
Vietnam veteran Gene Gio of Santa Cruz, California, one of approximately 850,000 living Vietnam War veterans that we honor, along with those no longer with us, on March 29th with National Vietnam War Veterans Day. Thanks for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you can join us again next time when we'll be reminded again by our veterans, regardless of when or where they served, of something they all understand more deeply than the rest of us ever could. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.